that particular season was, you know, a great, great season for you. I think it's definitely fair to say, again, one of your best performing at the World Champs.
Oh, 11.
In 2011, yeah.
Yeah.
Picking up a bronze medal.
Yeah, I'd run pretty well. I'd run pretty well that year, or all the way through the year. And then went to the World Champs. It was weird, though, because I'd crossed the line again in fourth place. Didn't have a clue what had gone on in the middle of the race with Liu Zhang and Dayron Robles kind of getting each other's way. So I crossed the line. I was like, you know what, fourth in the world. I'll take that. That's not bad. That's not. I'm quite happy because you've got Aries Merritt behind me, the world record holder. You've got David Oliver behind me. And then a couple of other guys behind me. It's like, you know, I beat some good people here. So I'll take that fourth place. And then I just remember walking, I got my kit and then did all the interviews. And again, I didn't have any idea. And I walked over back to the warm-up area and I saw Jerry, the old physio guy.
Remember Jerry? Jerry Ramajida?
Yeah.
Of course,
loved
G.
Jerry. But G, he was a legend.
I loved G.
He kept me in one piece for the year. So massive thanks to him. And then, I'm just walking back from seeing him and then I go towards the bus and he's just like, Andy, and I'm like, what, Jay, what's up? I'm going to go and get a drink now. I'm going to have a beer. And he goes, you come third. I was like, no, you dick, I came fourth. And he was like, no. He's like, no, this is when you're disqualified. I was like, what? I couldn't believe it.
And you were still on the bus at this point?
I'm walking towards the bus. Okay. And I grab him and I had to go down and speak to somebody. Then I hear there's an appeal going in and an appeal going out. So I'm just like, you know what?
A lot of waiting.
I'm going to go back to the room. My phone's on. Just let me know what's what. So I remember sitting in the room with all the sprint lads. And it was about midnight. And then I did an interview for BBC. And then I came back up and sat with the lads again. And my phone rang and they were like, oh, yeah, he's definitely going to be third. I remember the room just went up.
It erupted.
Madness, yeah. So that was kind of cool.
What was that moment like to actually go through that? Because, you know, we don't really hear about, you know, those situations are very rare in terms of the infringement. But then having that process of having to wait, you know, appeals, yeah. you've only got a certain window of time to get the appeal in.
Yeah,
and then there's a lot of waiting around. So you think, okay, how am I going to react if I win the medal? How am I going to react if we lose the appeal? Yeah.
I didn't believe it, if I'm honest. It just seemed a bit too far-fetched that it was going to happen, that he was going to come third and I was actually going to get a medal. I didn't believe it. But also, I didn't run particularly well. My time wasn't very good. And that's what bugged me. So I almost felt like if I got the medal, I'm going to feel like a bit of a fraud going on the start line, on the rostrum and taking a medal. And I remember reading some comments and people like, oh, he should be embarrassed getting that medal and this. And you're thinking, well, you know, should I even go up? I don't know. Like, how should I be? Should I go up and be happy we're getting the medal but yeah, it was a bit kind of a weird one to take, really. And then I didn't actually believe it until I was the next day when I got summons to the room to go and get the medal. I still didn't believe it until I got the medal around my neck. And I remember just stepping on the rostrum and I wasn't kind of like, you know, how I was when I won the gold medal. It was more of a case of, you know, thanks guys, no, nice one, cheers. Like, kind of like a...
imposter.
Yeah.
You go through a lot of that, just listening to you talk about your career.
I don't know if it's like self-belief or something, but I don't know. I don't, it's weird. I just kind of like feel that I wasn't as good as all these other guys. So did I deserve to be on that rostrum? Probably not, but... you know, the fact is I crossed the line in front of other people and that's what I need to kind of remember.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, no one wants to be given a medal. You want to earn the medal. But, you know, I took it.
and why wouldn't you?
You know, that's the good thing. I suppose I got my moment on the rostrum, I suppose, whereas other people who get upgraded
medals,
a month later, a year later, mm-hmm. when you lose out on the prize money and you lose out on the moment. So at least that way, I suppose, I'm fortunate, but it would have been nice to win it out.
And it must have been nice to come home and share those moments with your family. They'd obviously see your success, you know, your family within Barcelona as well, but now you're coming back as a world medalist. So what was that like?
Yeah, it was mad. I mean, because of the situation, everybody kind of wanted to know what my thoughts were. So your phone is just buzzing left, right, center, and people want to ask you questions and invite you on this show and that show. And, you know, it kind of changed your life, to be honest. And then, you know, financially, you're set for the next year or two because you're going to command pretty good appearance fees. So it was a really good time, to be honest. I enjoyed it, but at the same time, I just wanted to run faster. I wanted to earn my spot,
as opposed to
be given my spot, you mm-hmm. know. And that's what was always in the back of my mind.
Yeah. I know you mentioned about the financial side. I just wanted to touch on that slightly, because for you in particular, there's not many athletes who even we knew who we were competing on the team with who had bare children. There was hardly anyone, Andy. I think you were like the only one we were on the team who was on the team. Who did you know who had kids, like 2-3 kids, when they were like, you know, halfway through the career or
couple
middle
of the sprint lads, and that's about it.
Oh, okay, yeah. A couple of the sprinters, but you know, it was definitely good for you because, you know, you speak a lot about having to chase that financial side and perform well because the money's not necessarily for you. You're not trying to go out here and get the money and buy this like flashy car or, you know, buy a house. You know, you're not feeling you're not in a place of comfort for yourself. It goes beyond that. Mm-hmm. For you, it was always about finding that financial stability for your partner, for your children. Was that always your drive when, you know, you're going from one champs to the next champs to the next race and, you know, having those moments of you know, appearance being, you know, endorsements and that?
I think leading up to that point, so kind of 2004 into 2009, kind of before medals, although you win bronze medals, you don't really get much money, appearance fees and stuff. So you can't live comfortably off that. So every kind of race you do, you think, right, I've just paid this bill, I've just paid that bill or something. So that's kind of how you live for a little bit. But as soon as I won the gold, that thought never came to my mind. It was always, you know, I'm comfortable now. I mean, for instance, I'll tell you straight, that's one of the reasons why I used to love Manchester Street Race. I remember one competition, I made 20 grand. And that's pounds. And you think, well, that's not a bad little day's work. That's not.
And that's very rare.
Yeah, I mean, that's not anymore.
No, definitely doesn't.
For most of the races, you know, you command, you know, anything up to 5 grand per race for appearance fees. And, you know, I had Ricky Sims as my manager. So that's Usain Bolt's manager.
So you were the big leagues?
You commanded good money. Every time you stepped on the start track, on the start, you knew you were getting paid. And that's before your prize money. So, you know, I didn't have to worry about, right, well, I've got to pay this bill with this one and with this race and that bill. It was for the next few years, you know, you come to it, but I didn't want to be that guy who's going to rock up to training with a brand new gold chain and the best new Gucci shoes and this and that. So I just took it all away and saved it all up. And, you know, ended up buying a house with my money and another flat with my money. Yeah, had a couple of nice cars, but
I remember.
I did come with decent cars. But you know, I wasn't all about kind of trying to be flashy with the money and stuff with myself. I'd always make sure that the family's took care of first. That's the most important thing.
Do you think there's a misconception with maybe our sport or elite athletes in general where you are earning like a decent money or decent amount of money? Because let's be honest, track and field compared to football, it's not even close. But some people could say, like, you know, especially now because we are a lot more, you know, accessible with social media, you know, you post a picture as an athlete of you, you know, buying this flashy car, and then this person comments and says, oh, you should be training, or you're not even that good. You know, like you said, you suffered from getting trolled on social media yourself. So do you think there's a misconception with that? Because although at times it was stressful for you to have, you know, to find stability for your family, you seem to manage it well compared to maybe others.
Yeah, but I think the problem with athletes is they like to try and pretend they're balling when we know as athletes that they're not.
Thank you for listening to a preview of today's show. To hear the full episode, visit www.thehiddengreatness.com.